Say there, kids. Have you checked out this new Japanimation? I got this VHS cassette tape that somebody's put all the words at the bottom of it.
Okay, Boomer. We're talking about Bubblegum Crisis. Everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we continue anime 2025 as we take on Bubblegum Crisis, one of the first widely distributed fan subbed anime that went around in the United States. My name is Drew, and I need the motorcycle that also turns into like the jetpack portion of my body armor. Miles, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing all right. Man, I thought I was going to see your underwear.
Oh, God. Freaking Mackie, dude. That we're going to talk about Mackie. What a freaking creep. God.
Do we need to talk about Mackie?
Like, okay. We're just going to go and get Mackie out of the way right now. Mackie in this movie, in this OVA, he seems to be part tech guy, part mechanics guy. He is... of course, when they are changing into their uniforms, he's always like checking them out on the, you know.
Yeah, he's making sure that camera is operating.
But the one he focuses on most is his sister.
Yeah, this is an unfortunate trope that does pop up in anime quite a bit. I know for some series they kind of scrub that out in dubs and stuff, but like it kind of came back in full force in the late aughts and mid teens. I noticed it a lot in like Lee Cross and Fuki, and a lot of slice of life anime had these weird like, oh, I'm in love with my brother slash sister or cousin, because in Sword Art Online that first season, like the Kirito's cousin is like lusting after him, and like it's something that pops up a lot. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's just like a taboo to be a taboo.
I hope it's a taboo to be a taboo and not a meaning of something else. I don't
but know. It is something that does pop up in anime a lot. Not great.
Yeah. So anyway, this week we are talking about Bubblegum Crisis. But before we talk about Bubblegum Crisis, Miles, let's do a Macross 7 check-in.
Yeah!
So Miles and I have been watching Macross 7, and we do this on the Cosmic Crit Discord, which we will tell you exactly how to access later on in the show. But also right now, go to CosmicCrit.com, click on the Discord link in the upper right-hand corner. And we've been doing this on either Tuesday nights or Thursday nights. We have made it all the way up to episode 9. So we watched episode 7, 8, and 9. Six, seven, and eight. We watched 6, 7, and 8.
Yeah, 6, 7, 8 on Tuesday.
On this past Tuesday. Miles, how you feeling?
Pretty great. This is the third Macross show that I've watched, obviously. Well, technically fourth. I just don't really remember watching Macross Plus.
Yeah, sorry.
But this, I really enjoyed a lot of the 1 year war. Or what did they call it?
Space War One.
I loved a lot of that. You know, I had some issues with the 1 year later stuff, but I did very much appreciate and understood the importance of the first series. Macross Zero was fine. It was an oddity. Neat to watch. Liked it. Didn't love it. But Macross 7 is 100% up my alley in like every single way. And not only does it have, like, for me, sorry, first series, the best music I've heard so far. Like the Fire Bomber music, and not just the Fire Bomber music, the other bands, like, everything is great. The characters are so unique and different and fun. There is a little bit of a problem in that one of the characters is 14 and they don't write her Like, she's 14.
Yeah.
In terms of the shenanigans she gets into.
Well, they both do indult Ryder as she's 14. Yes. Because she is 14 attempting to be super independent and on her own and all of this stuff.
And seems to have her own apartment, I guess.
She does. That's part of her thing. She didn't run away, but, you know, her rich parents bought her an apartment.
But this takes place, what, 45 years after the original?
I think it's 40 years.
40? Okay.
Because technically the show takes place in 2045, and the last time we saw these characters was 2012, so it's actually more like 30-ish years.
Okay. And it focuses on a band, which, okay, it's a J-rock band. You've already got me. Drew knows music, big thing for me. Rock bands, big thing for me. And we get, like, already one of my favorite protagonists that I have experienced in quite some time, Basara.
I love Basara. There is a lot of people out there in the United States specifically that do not like Neki Basara. But I am not.
They're called morons.
Oh, got him. Got him. I'm a huge Basara fan. I think if you don't like Basara, you just don't understand him. Got to get on his level. And
yeah, but it's got a great energy. It apparently we're in the middle of some episodes that some people think are slow and don't have anything going on, which I think is insane. I have been hooked since episode one, and I don't even want to really summarize right now. I just want to implore people to check out the first 8 episodes and join us next week, because this show is so much fun, and I absolutely love talking and watching this with Drew, so that's not really anything else, but I do want other people to experience this and chat along with us, because it really is a great anime that I want more people to check out, especially once it gets a physical release, which I'm sure it will in the near future.
It's got to
I think they've all but confirmed that. This is kind of shaping up, at least I know, I think it's shaping up to be one of my favorite series in general. This is a great anime. And I basically, because, you know, we've been doing this entire month of kind of retro stuff, so I do have this affinity for stuff that was released at this time.
Yeah.
And it is certainly a show from the 90s.
For sure.
But everything about it works in ways that, a lot of shows that I was watching at the time just didn't do. The quality of this show is exceptional. I just don't understand how this isn't, some, Herald classic, outside of the fandom, because this show is just hitting every note for me.
I can tell you why it's not a heralded classic, because when it came out, it was extremely hard to get. I've told this story multiple times. I got shipped. This is the only fan sub VHS I ever got. And I got it from a dude in California who, I sent him some money. He sent me the tapes, as well as a couple other things that we were trying to get at the time. Some bootleg VF1 Valkyries. That was a whole other thing. Those were probably in an attic somewhere, wasting away. But and the quality was VHS, of course. But we didn't know any better back then. When I finally got to the third cassette tape of the series, none of the audio worked. But it still had subtitles, so I still watched every episode.
Awesome. I mean it's one of those experiences that is probably super obnoxious to experience in real time for that very first time, but you look back on it as a formative memory fandom.
If I hadn't have been,
you would have never got to see it.
16 or however old I was, I wouldn't have done it, It's
yeah,
I don't have that kind of time today, but I definitely had that dedication to a thing then.
Oh yeah.
And I kind of miss being that dedicated to something.
I miss having that time. Yeah.
also that. So that's Macross 7. Please come and hang out with us. Once again, you got to go to CosmicCrit.com, join the Cosmic Crit Discord, and look for channel WNRD on channel 3. That's our stage that we've set up to do that. We'll go ahead and say next week, as you listen to this, we did that on this Tuesday and are recording our episode on Thursday to release on Friday. Next Tuesday, the following Tuesday, whatever May, the whatever, we are going to be doing it on Tuesday night again. So get ready, get set. Let's do this thing. Now, let's switch back over to Bubblegum Crisis, a name that seems weird, but is proclaimed by the creators to be like bubblegum, ready to pop at any second, ready to burst open, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. I mean, I get that. It's not the term I would use, but all right. I'm into it.
I'm sure it's also a relation to the fact that it's 99% a female cast of this show. All the main characters are female. They wear colorful costumes and battle suits, hard suits, they call them, as they go into battle on their motorcycles and things like that. So the show takes place, and this was an OVA series. So once again, it's slightly higher quality animation released, you know, a little bit at a time. In this case, they actually released it month to month to month, and they made each episode kind of as standalone as you could. And we're going to get into a little bit of that as we talk about the four episodes that we watched, which were episode 1, Tinsel City, episode 2, Born to Kill, episode 3, Blow Up, and episode 4, Revenge Road. So,
So one of the cool things about this is, like you said, they are standalone-ish. And I do appreciate that in that, like, you know, especially when you were buying these, and I think you made the point to talk about how these were released monthly, correct?
Yes, this would have been from August of 1991 to April of 1992.
So, yeah, the first episode runs about 45 minutes long, and it feels like you got a good chunk of stuff. It's a very concentrated episode. It does stand on its own while kind of leaving things open. The first three episodes kind of form an arc together.
Kinda.
There is a recurring villain that is no longer in the show after the third episode.
Well, I looked up a little bit of a spoiler, and apparently he may not be.
Well, and that's fine too, but because I thought he went out like a punk. I like the scene, the heat, that fight is over immediately.
Well, I like the way that it happened. But yeah, this, the series revolves around the Night Sabers, K-N-I-G-H-T, as they are in Mega Tokyo in the year 2032. And Mega Tokyo has a problem with boomers. Yep, we've been saying it for years.
Yep,
it's all the boomers' fault.
Hearing that term in the year of our Cthulhu 2025 is quite a different experience than hearing this in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is set in the future. There has been a second Great Kanto earthquake that has, you know, kind of split the land a bit, and which is stuff I gleaned from the Wikipedia because the world building is not really well established in this series.
Yes.
I do like our Night Sabers are they're initially introduced kind of as mercenaries, but they're also conscious mercenaries. They're almost vigilantes. One of them in particular is basically a vigilante.
Yeah, they do take jobs, and for a couple of episodes at least, they are paid for by some governmental organization to try some things. But really,
who are mostly trying to figure out like how good they are and what the secret behind their stuff is.
Right, but there's also this mega corporation called Genom that is sort of behind the scenes, also in front of everybody, bad guys.
Yeah, adds a plus one to attack rolls.
Yeah, it's
sorry, it's a stupid cosmic crit joke.
Genom.
I know what the thing is in the show. Gosh, ruin it, Drew.
Tell a better joke, Miles.
No. I can't.
But they are a mega corporation that seems to be doing something. They have this gigantic sort of conical tower that's in the middle of the city that's gigantic that we don't really know what's going on in there. But they are the company that creates the Boomers. And the Boomers are basically cyborgs. They're robots that are meant to do something. They all have weapons. They fight. They are meant for a lot of different purposes. But also apparently there are just a lot of rogue ones running around that.
Yeah, there is a lot of. I'm almost wondering. Wow. The series was 87. So it's interesting that this comes out. This series is running around on the same time that RoboCop comes out. And there is some shared DNA. And it's one of those things where it could be something in the air. Like, I've watched a lot of documentary stuff, especially like the 5-hour docuseries on the making of RoboCop. And no one really mentions Bubblegum Crisis. But there was something in the air in science fiction in the 80s, especially in the States and Japan, that I think was just shared. And certainly a barbed look at corporations
mega corporations were huge. And obviously Bubblegum Crisis is very unique in that it doesn't borrow anything from these previous things, which is why the main character of the show is named Pris, and she is part of a band called the Replicants.
I don't think I caught the name of her band.
Yeah, it's Pris and the Replicants, and it's the poster.
That's so funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious. There are clear.
For Blade Runner, I get there is definitely some Blade Runner in there, but that's the same to be said for RoboCop. And the reason I keep bringing up RoboCop specifically is there's so much about Genom that reminds me of OCP.
For sure.
Especially with its, you know, it's quote unquote city revitalization projects where they just like completely oust low income folks from their tenement homes to bulldoze it for the next gentrified, you know, apartment complex or whatever.
Yeah, but it's the same thing that in Blade Runner you had what was the name of the company in Blade Runner?
I forget.
Not Voight-Kampff, that's the name of the test. Tyrell
Corporation, yeah,
in Blade Runner, that's making replicants, which are not supposed to be legal on Earth, but are a bunch of rogue ones are running around and they're indistinguishable from humans until they decide to start hurting people.
Yeah, so there was definitely a lot of Blade Runner in this. I think my biggest problem with this series is its world building is so inadequate that I just feel like we're going from plot point to plot point to get to the action, which is fine. That is a stereotype about a lot of anime from this time period. And I think, especially since I only had the dub, there might have been more that gets revealed in the subtitle version. I know, Drew, you said you had some experience with the sub.
I watched the first 3 episodes of this dubbed, and then I found a source that was legit called Night Flight, which Miles had heard of and I'd never heard of before, that had the... Not only did it have the Japanese subtitled version, but it also just seemed to be a better transfer of the video feed itself. It looked a lot better. And
probably from the Discotech release.
Probably. But I didn't notice that much of a difference between the dub script and the sub script. There were some changes, but not a ton.
Night Flight, if you were like me and were a night owl and watched a lot of kind of quote-unquote midnight programming when you were younger, as I absolutely did, USA Network had stuff like Up All Night. Night Flight was another series where they kind of like posted genre stuff, but also documentaries and anime and all this kind of like just kind of culty stuff, you know, stuff that's a little bit left of the dial. And it's kind of gone through different phases throughout the years, but it has now become a service where they basically house all of this cult stuff. And it changes through, and there's some imprints that I buy from, like Vinegar Syndrome, that have a home there. A lot of cool cult stuff getting it treatments that it likewise wouldn't.
It seems like a service that if I had found 15 years ago, I'd have been all over it. But
yeah, I got an offer because we've been talking about it for a year for $40, and I might take it.
Yeah, the big problem with me is that unless you're searching for something specific, it's so difficult to find anything on there because they don't just have genres. It's all curated playlists of content.
That
is like, it's cool. I just don't have the patience for
it. It's cool for surfing. And I do a lot of like idle surfing sometimes. And I use a lot of, but I've used some, I don't want to call them independent, because that's probably not the right word, but smaller streamers, especially because I'm into horror films and stuff. So I use like Found, which is a found footage streamer, Screambox, Shudder, all that stuff. And almost universally, and this is with streamers in general, the UI, dog poo across the board for most streamers in general.
Yeah.
But yes, go on. So you found the subtitle version on Night Flight in solid video quality.
Yes. And it was a much, much better experience all around. Because the dub version of this, but this was an early dub. This was a very early dub, early 90s when this came out. It's fine. It's just,
it's a little tin canny.
It's a little tin canny audio wise. And also I have a very difficult time telling the characters apart.
Exception of Pris.
With the exception of Pris, but only because she curses a lot. That's how you that. Can
No, she's got, she has a little bit more, she's got a deepness to her voice that's different from the others. But like the other two, I couldn't tell at all. But when Pris was talking, yeah, I could absolutely tell.
I could tell when Pris was talking. You also have Celia, who's the leader of the group and seemingly the one who has built these hard suits that they use to go into battle. We've already covered her gross brother, Mackie. We have Lena, and you know that she's Lena because when she drives her car says Lena in gigantic letters on the back of it.
Yeah.
She is like the most normal of them. Like, she goes,
you always have one of those characters in these teams. You always have like the normal person, the popular, the Cordelia, you know.
But even Cordelia has like she's got like a stuck up cheerleader vibe. Like Lena's just,
well, yes,
like,
but she's you know, continues to have a normal life outside of the Scoobies until she doesn't.
Yeah, but Lena's just like, she goes to work, she has a boyfriend, she doesn't have a boyfriend, you know, whatever. And then you have Nene, who is their inside look at the police department, who is also apparently a super elite computer hacker. And every time she goes into battle, she does a very poor job, which is like,
yeah.
I don't love that. It's also one of those things where in the dub, you could tell they were trying with Nene to get anywhere close to the Japanese sort of tonality of it. But these mm-hmm. characters are very common in anime, and they have performers that know how to do those characters. And they just didn't for the dub. And I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
But really the biggest difference between the dub and the subtitled version is we mentioned that Pris is the lead singer of a band, and mm-hmm. Kinuko Omori, who is both the voice actress and singing performer for Pris, her songs are so freaking good.
They are. And I will say this, because I will stand up for some of the songs in the English version. They're not bad. They're very very Pat Benatar demo.
At least they take the same music and write new lyrics to fit that music.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same.
It is certainly not as good. I'll give you that. But it's also not awful. It's not like a Robotech Macross situation.
Sure, sure. But the OVA opens with Konya wa Hurricane, which was actually Kuniko Omori's like debut single that she did in her professional singing career that they used for Pris in this.
Now that song this sounds show. Familiar.
That this song rules, and did a little research, and it turns out Miles and I had heard this before,
and I thought to myself, and I just shrugged it off. I'm like, no, it's probably something else.
Yeah, it sounds familiar. I feel like I've heard this, but I've been an anime fan for years, so I probably just heard it in something here.
Yeah,
Yeah, no, it was in freaking Scott Pilgrim takes off on Netflix last year.
Like I needed another reason to love that show.
Like that show had Will Forte, yes, comedian Will Forte, doing a comedic cover of Konoha Hurricane
and nailing it.
Yeah, but obviously, I think Omori's version is better. But
of course,
but it's that kind of thing where it's like, where despite the fact that Pris is in a band and the lead singer of a band, in four episodes we only see her on stage once. However, there is music woven into battle scenes and just like long, quiet motorcycle rides down Mega Tokyo streets and all of this stuff that just, and each version has lyrics. And they've done an okay job of putting English lyrics on top of it, but it's just not quite the same as when you have
the Japanese lyrics. So that's the weird thing is Pris is a singer that is apparently decently popular, but also no one ever seems to recognize her except for her suitor.
Well, she Hannah Montana's. That's part of what she does. She literally Hannah Montana's.
But she looks the exact same.
But she puts on the blonde wig when she's on stage. She Hannah Montana's. Hannah Montana.
I actually don't remember. I barely remember the wig situation.
Well, because it's in the very opening moments of the show, yeah. And then it never happens again. But
and we do have a scene where like she's going on a mission, but she's supposed to do a gig, and she just quits.
Yeah, which is like
slash gets fired.
But yeah,
that whole sequence is weird. I was like, I think they were like, we need a reason to like. Not have her here anymore because we can't keep up with new music.
Yeah, well, again, Bubblegum Crisis is extremely influential. It created Hannah Montana. Miley Cyrus as Pris, Bubblegum Crisis, live action.
There are so many other flip-flopping female leads.
Anyway. But yeah, and so each episode opens with a song and like a vignette of something. And then it also gives you a cool title card for the episodes, which is really awesome in its own style.
Mm-hmm. There's so much to like about this show. I mean, you can see where this show is influential because I mean, some of these super influential shows aren't always like these flawless masterpieces. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, hey, it's the first time we saw something like this and that makes an impact. And I think that's very important to state. It's not that this is a bad show. It's not a bad show. I didn't love it, but it's got a lot. And if you are an impressionable creator that sees this at a formative time in your life, this show is absolutely going to have a big impact because it was in, by the time this got to the States, we hadn't seen anything like this in animated form ever.
For sure. And again, that was why it was apparently one of the most widespread fan subs before Anime Ego picked it up and actually did a full release of it.
It's like, I think it's important to note, like outside of the glut of like anime films that, you know, we are now heralded as classics, like your Akira, your Ghost in the Shell, well, not Ghost in the Shell, that kind of came out in timely fashion, but your Vampire Hunter D, all that stuff. Outside of your Ralph Bakshi movies, and like the underground scene that would follow afterwards, like most Americans did not have an experience with animation that wasn't directly meant for a younger audience or all ages.
Yeah.
And I said that in a specific way because I don't want to hear someone come at me with like Fritz the Cat or Coonskin or anything like that. Like, But they're 100% were like adult animators.
Heavy metal that we've covered heavy metal, on this show.
For sure.
But it's like, but again, that those are isolated kind of one-offs, two-offs. It's not like, I mean, and granted, this was an OVA, so it's not exactly the same thing either, because that you had to go out and buy on a physical VHS.
But animation of this maturity and tone was frequent even amongst your televised shows,
right?
You know, and that's I think what the huge influence of anime coming in the States in the 90s was to me.
I agree. I definitely agree. This show We should also talk about sort of the other half of this show. And that's our boy Leon. Leon, the doofus.
Freaking doofus. There are some teens where I'm like, man, he's kind of cool. And then he will immediately undercut that by saying or doing something incredibly moronic.
Yeah.
Typically, it has to do with a girl.
Specifically Pris, in most cases.
And one time he hits on Nene.
So Leon is a member of the police force that is tasked specifically with hunting down boomers, which and he just gets clowned.
He's very bad at.
He's not very good at it. Granted, the entire AD police is not good at it at all, so it's not really his
yes
fault.
And like Corey Hart, he wears his sunglasses at night.
Yeah.
Which I think has to have some sort of cybernetics in, because there's a bit where he like specifically puts them on like after taking them off at night, and I'm like, what's going on here?
I don't know, man. There's some rule of cool stuff. Similarly, he has a partner. Is that Daly? Is that the name? Is that his name?
Something. Yeah, a partner that we don't spend a lot of time with, who seems to be one of the more interesting characters.
He is one of the first in anime male gay characters.
I wasn't sure if I was picking that up, or because I know there was some innuendo, but I was like, okay, they probably just didn't mean that. And I was like, they absolutely
it's
did.
Because the performance in the English dub is so flat that you really can't tell. But yeah, in the Japanese
version,
he
tries to add a little bit of that stereotypical sass to the voice, but like it's not noticeable enough.
And it's not done super stereotypically in the Japanese language Shrek,
which is great. That's I mean, that is a standout thing for this.
In the four episodes that we've watched, it's not treated as a joke. It's not treated as any kind of like comic relief.
He makes some jokes that like, because he is certainly a self-aware character, and it gets some snickers from the office, but I was like, well, that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I was like this is shockingly a progressive scene.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at that, and then to learn that it wasn't intended for them to be joking with each other. Well, I mean, it was joking, but like,
yeah, but like he is gay.
Yeah. And we got to talk about our bad guys. Although our main bad guy is kind of weird in that he, spoiler warning, gets killed in the third episode.
Yeah, and like, I didn't mind that like Celia just like takes him out.
Yeah, I liked that quite a bit. It seems like it would have been more impactful, I don't know, episode 8.
Yeah, well, they make this whole sequence of like how badass he is, and then like she just like pops up and they're like, oh yeah, you forgot I had this cool little sword, and it's going straight in your neck.
This is Mason, by the way, Brian Mason. Which, Miles, guess who he is voiced by in Japan?
Who is he voiced by in Japan?
Shuichi Ikeda, Shar Aznavel himself. He's back again.
That's awesome.
every week Ikeda has been in this show. This was not planned. I did not know.
It absolutely wasn't planned, because if you knew how, like, slapdash we put some of this together... I don't think he's in next week's episode, sadly.
Well, I don't know yet. We'll have to see. I don't see him on the list, but that didn't mean he's
I don't think he is. if he ends up in there, I'm just going to... Yep, he's here. And then, I mean, like that's what I would be like. I don't see his name on the list either.
Yeah.
But that is very cool. And, I mean... knowing that the character comes back in some capacity, because there's a lot of, like, again, there's a lot of world building here that needs to be done. And it's kind of weird because these episodes are longer, and while standalone, the first three do kind of form a little arc,
well,
you know?
And that's the weird thing about it, because there's clearly something that Celia goes into this room in her house, and she's not wearing her underwear. So her brother doesn't get to see her in her underwear. God, Mackie, you freaking creep. But she like puts on this headset and just gets these like flashes of technology stuff
Yeah.
And then we also learned that Mason has the same capability, and there is a lot of hints slash scenes almost depicting it that Mason is responsible for killing Celia and Mackie's dad, who is also a big time Genom scientist. And that's why Celia has sort of started the Nightsabers to begin with. None of this is just stated out loud, which I'm fine with, for the record.
I don't mind a slow burn, but I don't think the world is built enough for us to even really kind of take that in at this point.
Yeah, that's really the thing, because, and this is where, again, I didn't watch through episode 8, but I will kind of spoil some of the stuff I read about what happened to this show, and then I'm going to say something else about it. Apparently, the show does not end with any kind of reasonable conclusion. It just stops. There was apparently a lot of some people treat this as fact, others don't, but Artmic, which is the animation studio, and UMEX, the production company, supposedly had a huge falling out with each other that stopped the production of the show. There may or may not have been legal stuff involved, and that's what stopped it from happening. They were able to work some of that out with a follow-up series, Bubblegum Crisis or Bubblegum Crash, in 1991, a few years later. I guess it was just a year later, which again makes me think that that wasn't the case. And also when they put out DVD commentaries and interviews and things like that, none of the creators involved in Bubblegum Crisis or Bubblegum Crash ever brought up any of that. So it sounds like it may have been one of those like internet rumor fandom things that people just made assumptions and blah 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 blah, because it doesn't look like they've had that much of a problem with each other as on the surface of things. I don't know, it's been,
and sometimes it could have just been a at the time situation,
yeah,
where they got over it before anyone ever found out about it.
Yeah. So with that, any standout moments in these episodes for you, Miles?
I kind of criticize the show for kind of just jumping plot point to plot point to get to the action sequences. And here's the thing. I get it. The action sequences are extremely well done. They look great. Like, the style of the show is fantastic. It is weird, you know, this being an OVA, so based off a manga, so you kind of figure some of these characters might have had more life, because, like, there are characters we're introduced in the first or second episode, boomers.
This is not based off of a manga. This is all straight to anime.
Is it not based off a manga? Oh, all right. Well, then they got no excuse, because there are characters that feel like they should have been, like, you know, minor supporting bad guys or whatever, and they get murked in, like, the first legit fight they're in.
Yeah.
Because they pop up in the first episode, and then they're in a fight in the second one. Like, it just, like, one is like stalking the friend of one of the Nightsabers, and you think, okay, there's going to be like a cool like revenge sequence. Nope, that character is unceremoniously just killed in a fight. Like, nothing. So it does suffer from, you know, okay. So especially if there's no like prior a version of this story, it does sort of suffer from it feeling like it's flying by the seat of its pants and doesn't really have a grip on the story and the characters. But I will say, yeah, the action sequences are fantastic. I love any stuff with the motorcycles and Priss.
Oh yeah. Like the motorcycles and the one episode with the car were all,
yeah, the Griffin. Yeah. The
Griffin car were so cool, because I love hand-drawn mechanics. Again, I'm going to bring it up a second week in a row, talking about Redline, that movie we watched on the show a while back that I will probably rewatch in the next 60 days because it's just so freaking good.
It's so good. It's so good. You made Travis watch that, right?
Yeah, we went on a show. Weren't you there too?
Did we both? Was I there? I can't
I think
remember.
You were there. I know I was there. I don't know.
I know you were there. maybe I was there in spirit. Maybe I was there and didn't know I was there. That has certainly happened in podcasting before. But yeah, I mean, did you have a specific fight or anything that was that grabbed you?
I think the fight in Revenge Road with the racer is really fun. The ending fight of the first episode with the gigantic boomer that starts absorbing everything in a kind of an
that first
fashion
episode is really impressive in that capacity.
It was really, really cool. The fights between the the whole Nightsabers versus Mason and his like cool flying robot dudes with him, that was all really cool. And it's like, man, this feels like we should have earned this backstory a little more before this fight happens. But the fight itself was so rad because those things, I'll be honest, I didn't love the design of most of the boomers that we had seen up to that point.
They're too like T-800 exoskeleton vibe.
They also look like the bad guy from Krull, the beast from Krull, which is they were specifically designed after. I didn't hate it. I actually kind of liked it when they would like yell because like they had fangs that would come out like a gorilla yelling, which was kind of neat, or like a great ape yelling.
Yeah, I mean, so much of this series like has promise. It just I feel like the execution is very superficial, for better or for worse.
It is style over substance 90% of the time.
It makes me want to watch Bubblegum Crisis Tokyo 2040, because that series is a reboot of the OVA that apparently got a lot of praise, including being considered an improvement over the OVA. It's a 26 episode series. I am actually very interested to check that out. It came out in about 10 years later, and I would be curious to see like if someone just kind of like, you know, gave us some more meat to chew on. Yeah. For this universe, I think there's more there. And again, this is also the style of writing for a lot of stuff at the time, so it is a little more superficial. There's not a whole lot of character work, in so much as we know from modern storytelling. But yeah, I think you're right. This is very style over substance, but the style is very cool. The
style is very good, and so. To go over some of the other like sequels and stuff that this has, we have Bubblegum Crash, which is a 2 or 3 episode OVA that came out the next year as a sequel that takes place like a year or two after the show.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was AD Police Files, which is a prequel to the show, which is about the cop Leon and his up and coming time as a police officer in Mega Tokyo. Then the what you've already talked about, Bubblegum Crisis Tokyo 2040, which had a prequel series, AD Police to Protect and Serve, which is a 12 episode anime about that version of Leon coming up through the Tokyo Police Department. And then finally, the most recent thing we have is in 2003, an OVA called Parasite Dolls, which is set in the original universe, not in the recent reboot universe, about something happening after the events of the OVA.
Yeah, and apparently it ignores the events of Bubblegum Crash. I've heard talk of revitalization. I know there was some conversation about a live action movie about 15 years ago. Nothing's really happened, and I wouldn't be surprised if this does pop up in the near future. A lot of these old franchises are due and are coming back, and this is one, especially I think if the live action Ghost in the Shell movie hadn't fallen on its face, it might have gotten more push.
And if the live action Alita Battle Angel movie hadn't fallen on its face,
which is really, really good. Like, it's a really, really good movie, and it bums me out.
I still haven't seen it. I have read a ton of Alita manga because it was free on Comixology for a long time, but I still haven't watched them.
Yeah, I mean, James Cameron still says that he and Rodriguez might make a second one, which I hope they do, because it was, again, very solid. Well, it felt like the source material.
James Cameron's going to be making Avatar movies for the next 30
years.
Well,
that's why Robert Rodriguez directed it.
Yeah, I know. I'm just
because he had been talking about directing Alita for like 30 years before the movie came out.
Yeah, I mean, and clearly, like, there's some shared DNA with that and Terminator and all this stuff. But,
mm-hmm.
But yeah, let's wrap up our conversation on Bubblegum Crisis. I'm glad to have finally watched this.
Yes, me too.
I still may go back and finish it because it's only 4 more episodes, and it's got a cool vibe, and I want to see kind of what they pull out in the end. You know, it works in it's very, very style over substance, as we have said, but that's also kind of I think that's also kind of why it came through. Because a lot of animation even then was not substance either.
Sure.
When even the stuff that was aimed at kids, a lot of that has changed in the last 30 years. But yeah, I dug it. I didn't adore it. It didn't hit as the way I kind of wanted it to hit, but it's worth
the
time.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly had a cool vibe, and sometimes vibes are all you need. It is certainly worth following. It's never boring. It was weird to come from like the first 3 episodes seemingly having an arc, and then okay, here is a random standalone episode in the worst mystery you've ever seen. Which itself was a good story. It's just been fleshed out a little bit better.
Yeah.
I could see myself like going through this. It's only 8 episodes, and I was enjoying my time. So like Lotus War, this is something that I could see myself like, you know, just popping on. And luckily, because of the standalone nature and because of the release style, they do a good job of like, you know, if I had taken 2 weeks in between episodes 3 and 4, wouldn't have really noticed.
Yeah.
Like it kind of starts you in a spot and it gives you enough context that you're like, okay, I can pick this up. And I do appreciate that. It's a cool show to visit, especially knowing how influential it was. And I do like that we got to watch it.
Big same. Well, Miles, let us. Oh, man. Here we go. It's the final pick for anime 2025. It is one that was hugely influential in both overseas and here. And another one that I know by reputation alone because I never got a chance to watch it. We are watching the original 1993/1995, because that's when it came out in the US, film Ninja Scroll. So this is all about
Jubei,
who is... Like, this is basically going to be Onimusha the anime before there was Onimusha the anime.
Kind of. I mean, it certainly has the vibe, for sure. And so I saw this back in my misspent youth. And this is one of those ones, if you were a nerd in anime, it was like a checklist. Like, you had to have at least seen Akira, Ghost in the Shell, Vampire Hunter D, Ninja Scroll. Those are the ones to check off. Anything from there was a matter of taste and, like, you know, cool points of what you had seen. But, like, if you'd not seen the major movies, like, those were all, like, kind of your cred points at the time.
Yeah.
And this is one that was heavily, heavily advertised, just like Akira and Ghost in the Shell. Like, so many magazines, when this came out on DVD, like, had a huge, like, full page spread for it and everything for Suncoast getting it.
The Wachowskis cited it as an influence on the Matrix, so much so that they brought the director in to work on the Animatrix when they made that.
Which I hate that the Animatrix is not part of the 4K box set that I have. It's just the trilogy, because I want to rewatch the Animatrix. I remember some of those segments being like, I would watch an entire film based on just this.
Animatrix was on Max / welcome back HBO Max for a while. What a dumb situation. That is my most watched streaming service, but what a dumb, stupid situation that I hate. Anyway, I name check Onimusha with this just because the main character's name's Jubei, which is the same name as the main character from Onimusha, although they're different Jubeis. And I don't know if this Jubei is based on a real Jubei like the one in Onimusha or not. Oh, snap. Is Onimusha 2 out this month? The remake?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Yes. No. Awesome.
Didn't finish the first remake, but...
I love Onimusha 2.
I know you do.
Much more than the first one. I think the... Never mind. We're not talking about that right now. But yeah. I never saw this back in the day because I just couldn't get my hands on it. I don't think my local Blockbuster had it. And
that's surprising, as I wore a Blockbuster t-shirt.
Hey, there it is.
That's surprising, because that was actually, I think I rented this from Hollywood Video, because Hollywood Video tended to have more of the kind of cool kid options sometimes.
And you know, sometimes Blockbusters in certain areas would not have some of the, you know,
adult animation,
or just not have any anime at all, or they'd have three things. And
yeah, that's true. But I know at some point, the especially around the time that you and I were kind of coming up in that late 90s and early 2000s era, they would sometimes vie for exclusivity for certain things. And so sometimes that would happen. I don't know if that happened here. I don't think it did, but it's possible.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll look into it and we'll tell you next week. So next week,
I'll forget.
I will too. Next week, we are going to be recording late again, just because I have some travel stuff that's going to prevent me from watching Ninja Scroll before next Tuesday, Wednesday. But in the meantime, we are going to be back watching episodes 9, 10, and 11 of Macross 7 live with you guys on the Cosmic Crit Discord. We kick off at 8:45 p.m. Eastern time, just to give us some time to set up to really start by 9, so people can get there and join in and hang out, and so we can get the Senior watch party started, because we do have to use a third party program called Senior. It's basically just an extension you have to turn on that lets me control your play and pause button and your timeline. That's all it does. And again, it is unfortunate, but this one does require a Hulu subscription in the United States. I guess we could open it up a little more if we had some out of towners to do Disney Plus, but I don't know how that works with international accounts. But you also in the US have to have Hulu and Disney Plus tied together in order for that to work. So we're just trying to make it simple. Just say Hulu. If you want us to do the other bit, let me know. We'll figure it out. And to do that, you can go to CosmicCrit.com. What's Cosmic Crit? Well, Cosmic Crit is our sister show where Miles and I and all of our friends play Starfinder, which is a sci-fi fantasy RPG, tabletop RPG that we have been doing for, gosh, 8 years now, almost. More than
that. 2017?
Yeah. Almost 10. It's been pretty wild. It's a ton of fun. So come check that out. Join that Discord and just talk to me and Miles all day while we're bored at work. You can also find us at themoreyounerd.com, which is our show's page that has every episode that we've ever done, including stuff that you just can't get on your podcatchers anymore because we have too many dang episodes because we've been doing this show for too long. One day,
have we been able to get the older ones on that?
Haven't had the opportunity to do that. I have to create a separate feed that's just like a block of the first however many episodes, and I just haven't had a chance to do it. I'm sorry. I'm working on it.
Gotcha.
But in the meantime, you can go there, and if you subscribe to the RSS feed into a non, like through the RSS feed link, you should see everything. iTunes and Spotify and Google Podcasts and all of that, they're only going to show you X back. But if you subscribe straight to the RSS link, you should be able to see everything. I know it's convoluted. Podcasting is its own special animal, but I love it very much. It's why I spend so many hours doing it every week. So, and of course you can email us themoreyounerd@gmail.com. That's themoreyounerd@gmail.com. And in the meantime, we end the show as we always do with a rousing nerd out.
Too nerd for y'all.